shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first of the month Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over radio station WWCR on both transmitters 3 and transmitter 4, 4.840 megahertz and 5.890 megahertz, and radio station WBCQ 7.490 megahertz. Each of these stations also have their own internet feed, and you can go directly to our website, kingidentity.com, kingidentity.com. Go to the radio page, and you'll see a link there if you'd like to listen from that link. Also, we do archive all of our radio broadcasts, so you'll be able to re-listen at a later date. If you would like to participate in tonight's program, the number to call toll-free is 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE, 877-924-7722. For our foreign listeners or those who would just like to call directly, you can call 678-949-5091. Tonight we're going to be discussing what's considered a controversial topic among the general public, but also among many Christian patriots who sometimes have their own notions of political correctness, those who treat their own preferences as though they were God's laws rather than putting on the mind of Christ, as the Bible tells us, seeing what is really biblically correct. We will be discussing plural marriage or polygamy. My guests tonight have participated in plural marriage, each being the wife of men with multiple wives. They will be discussing the various aspects of this arrangement, and I'd like to welcome to the broadcast Fadika Joseph and Elizabeth Richards.
Well, hello.
Glad to have each of you. And why don't we start with you, Fadika? And I'd like both of you to answer this question. How did you become involved in plural marriage?
Well, it was it was a long journey, actually. I was always aware of God and Jesus Christ from the time I was a very, very little girl. We went to church. I was baptized into an Episcopal church, then attended a Presbyterian church, which I was confirmed in as a young adult. And then when I went on to college in Montana, religious studies was my major. And I thought, I guess I've always been a truth seeker. I just wanted to know answers to many questions I had. I thought if there was a God, that should be the most important thing in life, and I wanted my life to be about that. And it wasn't very easy to find clear answers, in part because seemed like everyone had a different opinion, and many people didn't believe in God at all. The first time I guess I ever heard of polygamy was when I was 13 years old. We were on a family vacation driving through Salt Lake City, and my father pointed out the window of our station wagon at a duplex, and he said, that's where the polygamists live. They had a door for each wife, and I kind of marveled at that, and didn't think about it again until I was a freshman in college and got a phone call from my mother that my brother's sister, or my brother's girlfriend, who was also a friend of mine, was thinking about marrying a polygamist. And like most people, I said, what? Why would anyone want to share their husband? I was I was flabbergasted. I didn't know anybody was living plural marriage in this modern day and age. And anyway, this man that this friend of mine was considering marrying used to come over to. We moved out of the dorm into a house, and I lived with five other women. And anyway, he'd come over to visit from time to time, and got somewhat acquainted with him. And then he married the twin sister of my friend, and that threw everybody into kind of an upheaval because she dropped out of college and moved to southern Utah to live with him, and her parents were very distraught. And I thought to myself that when I saw the pain it caused her family, you know, how could this be a good thing when it causes so much distress? But she was very happy, and living in this house with five other women, we shared all the cooking and the cleaning, and we were really good friends, and so I would think about the lifestyle of polygamy and thought, well, you know, I could see how it might work because it is nice to have these friendships. If, you know, it'd be nice to be married and have these kind of friendships as well. But I never seriously thought I would get into it. And then I met my very soon to be husband, Alex Joseph. And at that point, all considerations except one fell away. And that one was, I just knew I was going to marry him, that he was my husband. I guess now people would call it a soulmate. And I just had this knowing that I was going to marry him after I made the decision. And he asked me, I had a very profound spiritual, confirmation that I'd made the right decision. And that it wasn't because I wanted to become a plural wife or enter in a plural marriage. I'd like to say that, gosh, I just wanted to be obedient to God's law, and I knew that was God's law. No, I wanted to be married to that man. And I was very grateful that he had five other wives at the time, that they were willing for me to become his wife. And so anyway, that's how I got into the lifestyle. And I was married to him for 25 years until he died in 1998. And I did try plural marriage again for a very short time, a year after he died. And it was kind of a disaster. So I have more to be said about that later. But anyway, it was a great experience for me. And I guess that's enough for now. I'll let Elizabeth take it.
Okay. Mine was very different from that. I was actually raised in the LDS Church and had a pretty rough background in many ways. My family had had some major tragedy, and so my parents ended up divorcing, and I ended up going through some abuse. And so anyway, by the time I was probably 16, I was kind of just an emotional wreck, really. And I realized I didn't know how to make good decisions. I knew I was just a mess, you know. And I also knew that because of some of the decisions I was making, that I really felt I needed to be married. And so what I did, because in the LDS Church, you know, you're taught to fast and pray to get your answers. And so at this point, I was 17, and I just knew I needed help. And so I did a 3-day fast, solid, no food, no water for 3 days. And with the intention that I find out who I was supposed to marry, because I knew that for me, that was important. I knew, I had known since I was a young girl, probably 8 years old, that I'd have a large family. And I knew that I needed some structure and guidance that wasn't tainted. I had gone through actually some things with my father who, you know, just going back a little ways, it was my father that introduced Alec Joseph to plural marriage, actually close to this time. And my dad had also taken a second wife at the time I was about 16. So, I had two mothers and I was just doing a lot of soul searching. I don't know that I was really looking at plural marriage, though in my fasting and prayer, I just want to know who I was supposed to marry. I really wasn't thinking of polygamy per se, because I didn't know that was the direction I wanted to go in. But then my father kind of made it a challenge for me because I had made some really rough choices. And he made it kind of a challenge for me. If I straightened myself up, he'd let me go to the group. There was a polygamous group in Salt Lake. You know, so if I'd kind of get my act together, I could go there. You know, he'd let me go to the meetings. Well, anyway, I had gone to a number of these meetings by this time when I decided to do the fasting and prayer. But I recall just being in one of the meetings and walking to the front of the building, and my husband walked up to me, you know, before he was my husband. Anyway, he walks up to me, and his eyes just kind of lit up like a little Christmas tree. You know, he just had these twinkly eyes and gave me this big old smile and shook my hand. And something exchanged there. It was just like this knowing. And the next day he called my father and asked if he could date me. And so then I ended up going out with him and meeting his wife, and it just kind of went from there. But part of that, I was kind of, and I can't say it was a vision per se, but as I really felt the situation with my husband, and as I approached that lifestyle, I also had another, I'd had a person in my life for a while by that time, and I remember going to see him and talk to him and feel what that relationship was all about, and he really didn't want commitment, and he really didn't want children, and those two things were something I knew that I needed. And so I just, it made it really easy to make the decision to get married. And I met my husband's two other wives, and it just felt right. It was like, it was a knowing thing. I don't know that I was necessarily in love with my husband, and I had asked him, you know, when he asked me to marry him, I'd said, you really don't know anything about me. You know, why me? why are you even asking me? And I says, I've done things, you know, that you know nothing about. And, you know, I have a history and I've had a lot of pain and problems. And he was just like, you know, all that matters is what's forward, what's ahead of us. It really doesn't matter what's behind. And I was like, okay, well, we can go forward. And I just went with trust, knowing that somehow I was being guided and protected. And it was very controversial because I was actually still a member of the Mormon Church, but was quite soon excommunicated because of these choices. But I believe, you know, I believed at that time, and I believe still today that I was totally guided by the spirit to make that decision. So, anyway, there's that part.
If I could interject one other thing about that, you know, I guess I should say, too, the month before, I talked to Alex on the phone once. I had met him briefly. First time I met him, I was pretty cynical and skeptical about him, but then I ended up talking to him on the phone, and I just had the strongest sense of peace after we spoke on the phone. And it was kind of like what Elizabeth was saying. He just seemed to know things about me that he couldn't possibly know, you know, but he just was wise. And that month, I also did, I was praying very, very diligently and really had a sense of just trusting. And I was so ardent in my prayers of wanting to have, to be guided and to do God's will and to know what God's will for me was and to get answers to my questions. And when Alex showed up, I mean, we after 12 hours of being with him, and it was just mostly me asking him questions and hearing answers that made more sense than anything I'd heard in my long life of 20 years at the time. And I just thought, I don't ever want to leave his side. But like Elizabeth, I felt very much guided by it. And it also, you know, I know it was an answer to prayer. So I certainly don't want to minimize the impact of the fact that it was, in seeking to do God's will that I was led to marry Alex.
Well, both of you sought God's help through spiritual guidance, and both of you come from a kind of an independent background where your younger life wasn't part of plural marriage. How does this compare to organized church groups that are already practicing plural marriage? How are they arranged marriages, or are they just, how are they different from people who come in from an independent background?
Well, I, being part of a group in Salt Lake or that in that vicinity, I think originally it was probably more, by the time I got into it, I think people were pretty independent. So that women and men, you know, they were actually choosing each other. They weren't really arranged marriages. There was some of what to me was disturbing of women who would leave their husband and marry somebody higher up in the priesthood. And I never felt right about that, observing that happening in different families and, watching people's families fall apart because of it and then, but then status and those kind of things seem to be important, but, I never felt good about that kind of arrangement, those arrangements, or people bartering their daughters. You know, I've known women who, you know, as young women were pretty well bartered by their parents into, you know, but that wasn't part of what I was involved in.
Of the ones who did it correctly, is there a structured courtship, or is it just sort of like worldly dating that we find out in society?
I think that's probably as individual as the people doing it, you know. I mean, if you're part of, like, a structured group, like the polygamous group with Warren Jeffs and them, I think it's pretty well arranged. You know, the girls are married off generally, I mean, very oftentimes very young. And in some cases, you know, they end up, you know, married off at maybe, golly, I think my friend, one lady I know said she was married to her husband about 9 years old, and he, even though there was nothing supposed to happen that night, you know, she said that he did everything that he could sexually. But I think that's not the norm at this point. I don't think in most polygamous situations that's a norm. I think that's an exception. But I think as women are standing more in their own truth and in their, you know, and I mean, for me, I'm one that will protect my children first and foremost. And I wouldn't allow my children to be involved in situations where they were being manipulated into marriage. I want them to be open to choose and to go where their heart guides them, as I believe I did. Even though there were
people who are seeking a biblical lifestyle, would there be some chaperone type courtship or something of that nature?
Well, you know, when I first started with my husband, you know, I went and had dinner with him and one of his wives. So, and for him, he was so principled. You know, he just had to do, you know, we didn't really have chaperones, but he was very principled and didn't want any kind of activity until we were married. And, you know, he was just a good man.
Yeah, and
I
think...
Do you have a comment, Padika?
Well, I do. There's a polygamous group that I've become pretty well acquainted with over the last 5-7 years. They broke away from the Warren Jeffs group when he came into power. And in fact, I'm invited to a wedding on the end of this month over there. And she's going to be the first wife of this young man. And, you know, in talking to them, usually the girls choose who they want to marry. And when they decide someone else, they generally will go to their father and express that their interest. And then they'll get, they go to the church leadership, and kind of, you know, get approval, get sanctioned. I don't know how long they date typically. Alex, he did not date women. If there were women that were interested in him, we had a lot of publicity. One woman read about us in our family in the Rolling Stones magazine, and she came out to visit, and she lived with us she lived with us for at least 6 months, maybe a year. And then finally Alex married her, but even after he married her, he didn't consummate the marriage with her. He never did, as a matter of fact, because he understood that she had love and sex confused, and he wanted to show her that he loved her even without any sex being involved, because, you know, she'd been hurt by men that had used her sexually. And, so every woman was different, but dating, this is just kind of my observation, dating can cause a lot of problems for the wife that is there if the dating goes on for a while, because it's a difficult thing for a wife when her husband becomes interested in another woman. I mean, you can't help but feel I don't like using the word jealousy, because I think jealousy has a real sexual component to it. Men are, and I hope I don't offend anybody by making blanket generalizations here, but as a general rule, I think that males are more territorial, and their wives belong to them, and they expect that, sexual it's a monogamous relationship with a woman has with her husband, in the sense that it's just her in having that one sexual relationship, and that's with him. And so sexual jealousy is very much a kind of a biological, I think, for men. For women, I think the feeling is more one of insecurity, because we're hardwired to want to feel safe and protected and that our children are safe and protected. So when another woman comes along, that biological thing is he going to leave me? Is he going to abandon me? Is he going to like her better than me? So it's this feeling of not feeling safe and secure. And so it's really up to a husband to make his wife feel, loved and safe and protected. And if that courtship goes on for a long time and she's being left, especially if there's only one, while he's going out and having this, taking her out to dinner, or, she thinks she's having a good time, well, you can see that could cause some real problems. So generally, Alex kept whatever courtship we were having very short, and I think it's not uncommon at all for whatever wives a man may have to be involved in that courtship process, where she's coming in to see if she can fit in with the family, if they like her and she likes them, and then the marriage happens.
In the world, even among the more fundamental churches, there's a difference between Christian courtship and just a worldly type dating. I'd like to ask both of you, what type of men and women do you believe are best suited to this lifestyle? I'm sure that there's a lot of people who aren't suited, so what type of men and women are best suited?
Well, I would tend to think that people who are reaching for a greater or more godly expression of themselves. You know, they're reaching for more. They're not worried so much about what is self-serving and what, you know, if you're reaching for the highest good, let's say for your highest good, and if you're acknowledging that, you know, you may not always know, because as a kid, you know, I was 17, I didn't know what was for my highest good. I didn't have enough life experience, but I knew some things, and I had had quite a bit of life experience at that point, but I knew a lot about what I didn't want, when I was inspired to marry my husband and knew that that was my direction, it really wasn't about dating. It was more about honoring what I was feeling. It was honoring what was inside of me that felt to express through that avenue, and meeting the other women and realizing that ultimately, for this to really work, I had to love them as much as I loved myself and as much as I loved him. And I wanted him, you know, it was like, okay, here I am, the third wife. And at that point, that was okay with me because I felt, well, it would be really hard to be a first wife. And then to have other wives come into the family, it would be harder on them than it will be on me because I'm the third. And I'm fitting in and I'm doing what I can to be part of the family, and we're working together and playing together and having prayer together and doing all these things together. But as far as people, I think you have to be committed to something greater than yourself. You know, if you're just looking at what's going to make you happy in the long run, and if you're going to expect everything in your world and everybody else in it to serve you, it's not going to work. But if you're in for reaching to become more godlike, then you're going to, you know, to realize that this really isn't all about you and that there's a greater purpose. And I feel, you know, for me, like somehow I raised my hand and picked plural marriage as a means of personal growth to give me life experience that very few things could have given me, the levels and layers of experience that I believe that it gave me. And, you know, looking in hindsight, I can see it, you know, in ways that I could never have dreamed, you know, as a young girl.
You're put into a situation with not only a husband, but with a number of different sister wives, each with their own personality and mannerisms and so on. What are the benefits and how are problems resolved when they come up?
Well, go ahead. I'll go after you. Well, I was just, for us, we work together a lot. My husband was actually a naturopath and chiropractor and was working with another doctor delivering babies and helping people and doing chiropractic and doing a lot of different things. And this was in like the 70s, mid-70s. And so me and the other women, you know, money was, it seemed to be always a problem. But so we ended up working and we worked together. We took care of each other's children. We made meals together or took turns making meals. You know, sometimes we nursed each other's babies. Sometimes, you know, we just went through different aspects, realizing that it took all of us to make it work. And, you know, it wasn't always rosy. And, you know, I have my, you know, there's, you know, we each have our story and we each have our own pain, but we're not necessarily a result of what we go through. We're a result of how we handled what we go through. you know, how we interpret our experiences and how we let them either break us or make us, you know. They turn us into someone greater, or they get the best of us and crush us, and we get angry and go a different way, you know.
Lodika.
You know, I think, I remember as a brand new wife, Alex we had some horses, and he had a wife who was really good with the horses, and so whenever there was some activity that involved doing something with the horses, he would always check her to go with him to go do that activity. And I said to him once, well, I'd like to go do something with the horses. And he said, don't take away from Pamela what is, you know, belongs to Pamela. Find out what the best thing you can be is. That was quite a challenge, actually, because, you know, they were Alex's wives. One was an attorney, you know, she had five kids. She was just a real good homemaker, good cook. They were really talented, bright, strong women. And finding a niche where, and maybe I'm more prey to insecurity than some women might be, but, you know, where I felt like I was important in my own right, as well as being part of the group, it took me a while to do that, and just because of my own false insecurities. But, you know, I think it was, Alex was all about, this is the standard of behavior in my family, impeccable behavior. Elizabeth described it actually really, really well. The idea was to try to, you know, to be, well, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And I guess bottom line, we wanted to please Alex. And, you know, he worked really hard, and he just, well, and from a very practical standpoint, if you were not being pleasant and helpful and, you know, kind of being on your game, you got unhappy in a hurry, because other people were, you know, they were being helpful. When you're being helpful and looking out for others instead of being selfish and possessive and jealous, I mean, you're happy. And who doesn't want to be around somebody happy? And nobody wants to be around somebody miserable. So if you were going to be miserable, you were miserable all by yourself. And if you, you know, it just, you figured out that that was not the way to be. So, you know, there were lots of little, there wasn't a lot of pettiness, because Alex just wouldn't put up with it. I mean, you sensed his disapproval, and it wasn't anything he said. It was just, you just wanted to, you know, just something about, he brought out the best in people and made you want to be good. And the people that didn't, you know, that just weren't willing to be helpful to make the, Elizabeth said it really, really well. It really was about making the whole family work. I mean, we were a unit. And if you wanted to go be a drama queen, and there were women that just wanted to get special attention, and they didn't last. They ended up leaving, because Alex was very focused on trying to win God's approval by obedience to what he understood to be correct principle. And if you weren't doing that with him, you just kind of cut yourself out of what was happening.
Let me give out our toll-free number again, in case anybody would like to join the conversation with their questions, comments, whatever. The number is 877-924-7722. 877-924-7722. Those who would like to dial directly can call 678-949-5091. What we're talking about here is patriarchal marriage, which is biblical marriage, but I guess it takes a good patriarch to make a good family. And there's so much of this women's liberation preached out by the establishment media, schools, churches, etc., that a lot of people are of that mindset. How would you compare patriarchal marriage versus women's liberation? And also, what is your feeling towards the lifestyle that's pushed in the media? For one thing, they negatively portray polygamy at all, and they always interview rebellious, bitter women who left the lifestyle. So what are your feelings when you see things like that, or when you see people who are not fitted for a patriarchal type marriage?
Well, actually, there's not, you don't mind if I go first on this, Elizabeth, because I think there's some real misperceptions. First of all, those girls that have left for very good reasons. Those communities where you see these women that are very bitter and anger are the kind of communities where girls are married off at young ages and bartered off by their fathers and molested, you know, I mean, usually into sexual relationships at very young ages, married to old men they didn't want to marry. And it's no wonder they're angry and bitter, because they were pawns to this, you know, status was gained by the number of wives you had. And everybody was men trying to curry the favor of this profit, because there's a lot of money involved in that, just because everybody pays 10% tithing, and it's about money and power, and it in the Warren Jeffs group in particular, huge corruption still going on today, and the women and children are suffering mightily because of it. So, you know, let's not confuse what's going on there and why these women are angry and bitter. It has nothing to do with the practice of plural marriage. It has to do with some very, very evil and unprincipled practices by some men. And you can tell I feel very strongly about it, and I am also angry, and it gives a bad name to polygamy because they're doing that. And then as far as, like, I think that the women's lib movement that's gone is a product of monogamy. And I apologize to any monogamists out there, but, you know, it's funny listening to Alex's wives who have gone into monogamy since his death. And I hear that most of them lament the loss of freedom that they enjoyed in plural marriage, and report that, you know, gosh, men are needy and they require a lot of attention. And, you know, when there were, 9 of us, let me tell a little story. Alec had the opportunity at one time to buy a motel, and it was from a man who belonged to this, the group that Warren Jeffs now heads. And, anyway, he wanted to sell Alex's motel, and Alex said, no, I am not willing to turn my wives into motel maids. And Alec was, I've seen men that the wives are there to meet their needs, you know, to make their, give them status, or help them do their businesses, or, you know, for all kinds of reasons. But Alec, he was really about championing our opportunities to fulfill our own potential, our own desires. You know, what do you want to do? And how, and help us do that. You know, in my own case, he incorporated a town. And one wife was the municipal attorney. I got into real estate, and I it was a ball. I mean, I had such an unusual real estate career because I got to build a town from scratch. How many people get to say they can do that? You know, but he created the environment that allowed that to happen, and the financial pressure wasn't nearly what it would have been. I mean, there were a lot of people helping to meet the needs of the family, which made everything easier. So, and I had we had the opportunity to know our children were being okay, taken care of, even though we were able to work. So all the things that women libbers are wanting, you know, they want to be liberated from the enslavement that happens to many women, you know, where they're having to have all the children and cook all the meals and do all the laundry and do all the housekeeping. It's a lot of work. And, you know, they say, well, gosh, you know, we want to go pursue a career and do that. And it's almost impossible to to do that in a monogamous lifestyle and make sure the children are taken care of too. So I think plural marriage is the answer to the women's lib movement. It's not like it's a oppositional force. They just, people just don't understand it. Now, for men, if a man isn't, if he's all about making, having a great job and making a lot of money, if that's his primary focus in life, I think he's going to have a hard time having a big family because, you know, I think sometimes men forget that all those women and children are coming to you with their problems. If you're not a good problem solver, you're probably not going to like being in patriarchal marriage. So, go ahead, Elizabeth.
Of course, what you're saying essentially is that Alex was a good patriarch compared to these men who were undesirable, as you mentioned a little bit earlier. We have a caller.
No, I think okay. I just want to make one point though about that. Those men, corruption of a religion. It's religious. It's the religion at fault that they're practicing.
There's plenty of religions that are way off, in my opinion. But anyway, it still would take a good patriarch to make a successful marriage. Even in a monogamous situation, it takes a good man.
Absolutely.
We have a caller, James from Spencer, West Virginia. You're on the air.
I do. I made friends a long time ago, 15 years ago, with a lady in the Christian chat room, and she had a brother who she said was way up in the priesthood. I'm glad things have worked for these ladies and their families. But she found out all kinds of corruption, real estate dealings, and this, that, and the other. She was at a point where she knew too much. After 20 years, she basically, as she said, I escaped with my life. I lost my 3 children. But at any rate, she referred to the Mormon Church as a cult, and her brother was way up in the priesthood. And the closer you were to the very central bureaucracy, the greater were the odds there was corruption. And her big mistake, as she said, was I confronted with my brother with everything that I knew. Then everybody turned against her. She escaped. She had heard that they were going to hunt her down. What that meant, I don't know. But she took off and visited somebody she had known from college. She was in, I think, Michigan. And she went back to get some of her stuff, and she didn't have any stuff left. But she was very, very down on the whole Mormon church. Now, I know there are problems in the Catholic Church, Protestant denominations. It seems like every major institution in this world has been infiltrated with evil people. But how do you deal with the fact that there are those who are extremely trapped and unhappy? I'm not saying you all were. But how do these people get out alive?
Well, it doesn't sound like that the woman you're talking about was involved in plural marriage either. She was in Mormonism. And I think, you know, I don't know that it matters what religion you're involved in. You know, when you're, every relationship can go that way. And there's a power struggle between the parents, you know, and there's a fight over the children. And if there's money involved, then the priesthood can get involved. I mean, you know, then you're getting into all this other stuff.
It was awful.
There is some all really awful stuff. But in the meantime, I think whatever we choose to go through here in this life's experience is designed to bring us closer to God. I think even if you're headed down a really nasty, ugly path, I don't care if it's drugs and alcohol or whatever you're choosing, it's, you know, the quicker you get to the bottom, the quicker you get to a place where you'll pay attention.
I agree.
To the promptings of the Spirit, to becoming why you wanted to come here in the first place. I believe we had a choice to come, and I believe we're here by choice, myself.
Well, but, to be flatly honest with you, I'm a fundamentalist Christian, monogamous, and very happy that way, believe me. And I'm sure that for those who want to become involved with plural marriages, that's their choice. I don't have a problem with. But it just amazed me that there's so much of it in the Mormon Church. And as I said, the closer you get to this any central organization, the greater the odds for corruption. Mm-hmm. But this gal says, I was lucky to get out with my life. And she was extremely bitter towards the whole shebang. But I thank you, ladies, for telling us the other side of it, the better side of it, because I thought of it as monolithic. In other words, the Mormon Church and plural marriages and all that as being monolithic as opposed to different. And I truly agree that everything God has designed everything from our first breath through our last bring us closer to Him, no matter how far away we may go.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the fact that you're centered on that. I'll let you all go, okay?
Thank you for your...
Thank you, James, for your phone call. If anybody else would like to call, the number is 877-924-7722. Would you ladies like to kind of contrast the Mormon Church, fundamentalist Mormons, and just independent Christians who enter this lifestyle?
Well, it sounds like, to really contrast it, you'd have to have more experience from different directions, you know. So I come from a Mormon background, and I totally understand where he was coming from, and I know those stories. But there's also stories that totally contrast that. So I think most LDS people are doing their best they can. And, of course, you've got factions within factions, and maybe there's some cultish aspects there, but I don't know that that's exclusive to Mormonism. I don't believe it is. I think you have that in any religion. And, I know a lot of people that, you know, blame it on Mormonism, but I just see it as bigger than that. It's a global problem, you know, of the suppression of women. You know, you can take it into the women's lib movement, but women are suppressed all over the world. And I believe that we go through some of that in order to help shift it. And I believe that I chose what I chose so that I could help shift the negative aspects of it by seeing it differently, by not getting caught in the victimization of it, by realizing that no matter what, I was responsible for my choices. And it was my job to make the best of any choices that I made. And it wasn't about blaming anybody. And if I wasn't happy, I had to figure out how to be happy. And I had to make choices that accommodated that. I believe that everybody's journey is a spiritual journey, whether they understand it or not. Because it's just how it's designed, you know, and we can fight it. We can run the opposite direction as far as we want. And it will bring us back around because, you know, the way I see it is we're all children of God and we can't grow up to be chickens, you know. We can't grow up to be what we're not. And we need to look in the mirror and realize that we're here by divine design. And to just trust that, to trust that we are children of God and that we are here for a purpose and to really go within and ask ourselves what that purpose is.
Well, I think both of you would agree that just like in monogamous marriages, plural marriages vary from family to family. And I hope to get across tonight that there are good plural marriages. It's not all negative. It is a scriptural lifestyle, and that those who wish to participate in it, there is a good marriage if you have good people that enter into it.
If you have, you know,
if I could get back to some of these issues, you know, I think the problem, anytime there's, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And where these groups kind of came from, when Joseph Smith is the founder of the of the Mormon religion. And he taught that there was a mantle of authority, the Melchizedek priesthood, and only one person on the earth has it as a time, which is, you know, goes back to the Old Testament with, you know, whoever had the priesthood authority, and that it was then conferred onto another person. And, that only one person had that authority. So these groups sprang up, the different fundamentalist groups sprang up when different men claimed that they had the authority. So, for example, when the LDS Church, in order for Utah to become a state, they had to give up the practice of plural marriage. And they had lost homes and then run out of towns over and over and over again. And, you know, they came all the way out to Utah hoping to be left alone, and then they were faced with losing everything again, and they just said no more. And they finally got a revelation from God, supposedly, no longer practice, to obey the laws of the land and no longer practice plural marriage. And then, you know, that got written into their state constitution. But there were some who, in fact, the third president of the LDS Church, John Taylor, had a revelation that that not 1 year was to go by without a child being born into a plural marriage, into the plural marriage lifestyle. And he ordained five men to continue the practice. They were ordained to seal men in plural marriage. And then it kind of got into this fight over authority. And, you know, who had the authority from God to do this? And it was, you know, who's more righteous? Who's got the authority? And again, it became corrupted because of tithing. You know, when you have in order to be a temple, be able to go to the temple, the LDS temple, you have to be obedient to the prophet. You've got to pay 10% tithing, and you sure better not drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes or drink coffee, you know. But that 10% tithing is a big part of it, and that amounts to a ton of money. And there's, you know, there's corruption wherever there's a lot of money. It happens in corporations. It happens in governments. It's just the nature of the beast of greed. And it's not confined to religions at all. But anyway, that's kind of where these different fundamentalist groups broke off from the LDS Church. And I think Christian fundamentalists, you know, they're going for, and that's kind of where Alex got to. He said, I'm living this lifestyle because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were the only three men specifically mentioned by Jesus as being in the kingdom of God, and all three of them were polygamous. And every prophet, with the exception of Daniel, in the Old Testament was a polygamist. So, consequently, if you want to win the God, if you want to have the perspective that those patriarchs had and understood what they understood, and there is that parable, the kingdom of God is like a man with 10 wives, if you want to have that perspective, then you need to live that lifestyle. And that was his basis for living it, and I guess that would be a Christian fundamentalist basis. Does that answer the question you were trying to address?
Yeah, we're right near the end of the broadcast, and we do have another caller. Marion from Baltimore, Maryland, you're on the air.
Yes, I heard some of the guests there talking about women's lib and maybe complaining that they weren't able to have the careers they wanted. But I think what's happening there is they're just complaining that they don't have the man's curse, too. They're not satisfied just with the woman's curse. They want the man's curse, too. Remember in Genesis, and God cursed the woman and said, you know, your desire shall be to your husband. And for the man, he cursed the man and said, in the sweat of thy face shall thou eat bread. Well, they're just not satisfied with their curse. They want the man's curse too.
Well, thank you for your comment. I hate to cut you off, but we're right at the end of the broadcast.
I understand. Have a blessed evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Do you have any final comments, Vedika and Elizabeth?
Alex used to say that Women's Lib was the worst joke that men ever played on women for that very reason, you know, that somehow it was better to be like a man than to be a woman. And the last question I asked him before I married him was, you know, you're so much older and wiser than me. I always thought marriage would be a 50-50 deal. And his answer was, what's wrong with being 100% a husband and 100% a wife? I went, yeah. That's all.
That's great.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you ladies for being on the broadcast tonight. I think it's been very interesting, but we're just going to have to end here because we're out of time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you were fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com, type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.